As Linda mentioned, I am going to shift gears a little bit and talk about the objective one of the project. And as was mentioned earlier, the major overall goal of U2U is to come up with new information to help inform the decision-making, or the weather and climate-related decision-making process for corn production. Given the comprehensive and detailed information that they offer, the use of crop simulation models, and that's what I'm going to talk about, was a major method that was used in this project to help with the cause and effect. In other words, to how to put together the influence of weather and climate on crop production, or on corn production in the Midwest. The objective, and this is a sort of an objective one, or for group one here, an objective, but characterization of weather and climate's role on corn production, identification of spatial and temporal patterns here, both past or historical and then projected future time frames, and for scientific reasons, given the, and we have an extensive modeling framework that was developed for this project, to really start to look at some of the pieces of the modeling process itself and come up with an idea of relative sources of variability and uncertainty, which is a big part of the process itself. The approach that was taken in our group here essentially was to run a large number of models under a variety of assumptions and conditions. And bear with me, it's an extensive list here. There were three different models that were used here. I'm going to save time and be simple here. I was associated with the Series Maize simulation. You'll see some of those results here. There were three different spatial resolutions, single sites, 4 kilometer, 32 kilometer. You're going to hear a little bit more about the 4 kilometer resolution with our next speaker. Two time slices that you saw earlier, historical and future. Now the next one, and we love acronyms, but there were a large number of climate models that were used especially to look into the future. And don't have to read all of these, but we looked at three different regional climate models, three different global climate models that are when the regional climate models were embedded within. We came up with 5 combinations there and wanted to, again, look into the future. That's how we did it. We looked at the use of downscaling as an approach to bring the coarse-scaled information from the climate models down to a local level, versus no use of downscaling. I'll talk more about that in a second. If you're interested, the assumption for our future time frame, which is mid to late century, 2041 to 2070, was the old SRES A2 scenario, and this was taken from CMIP 3, or the third climate change assessment. And finally, again, looking for practical pieces of this within the Midwest, we looked at both rain-fed and irrigated systems. Some very interesting differences there. Now, for the crop modeling associated with Series Maize, which is a part of the DSAT system, you can see some of the assumptions that were made here. We can't use the model if we don't trust what it's saying. So there was an extensive validation that took place here, both at a field level and then on a larger level, a county level. These 18 sites here you'll see here in just a second. We ran those on both rain-fed and irrigated systems for the historical and projected future. I'm going to focus mainly here with results. We're going to see some of the results from our projected future timeframes. Now, in the modeling process, to try and focus and isolate the impact of weather and climate, we keep technology essentially constant. And that's one of the nice things that these crop simulation models can do and offer us. It's also important to note that the effects of pests, i.e. insects, disease, et cetera, were not considered. Those are very important, but again, the real goal here is to look at weather and climate. Those, to be realistic, should be, but were not in this particular project. And to do this over a large 12-state region, we took extensive data from the NRCS soil survey, and in our modeling, when we looked at both planting and irrigation, there were automatic functions that look for a set of specific conditions before those can take place, and those were used. Our study domain, as you've seen before, the 12-state area of the upper Midwest, major and minor production areas here in green, But I ask you to focus on, it's a little difficult to see, the yellow here, these 18 single sites. I'm going to show you output and results from these sites. And that covers most of our major, the major corn production area in the U.S., including some new production areas, and there's rapidly expanding corn production up in the Red River Valley in parts of that 20 years ago did not even produce it. But we were especially interested in some of this northern plains area, and you'll see some of those results. So I mentioned if you can't trust a crop simulation model, you can't really use it. This is an example of some of the validation, both over time series. You can see this is simulated versus the observed yields for a site in eastern Iowa, and then a scatter plot here on the right. Overall, the model did fairly well. There were some exceptions to that. Looking at this spatially, here this is using a 32-kilometer spatial gridded data set. Here's what the model came up with for a 10-year period, and here's the observations from the NAS folks at USDA. And you can see that overall the model does a fairly good job of replicating the core area of the U.S. Corn Belt. Differences here, relative differences between simulated and observed are in the lower left, and you can see that the model tends to overpredict in some areas like the northern Wisconsin and Michigan, and it definitely underpredicts in the west. But that's to be expected because, of course, most of this production out here in the western part of the region is irrigated and not rain-fed, and so that's one of the things we expected. But overall, the model does a fairly decent job. Well, let's look quickly at some results here. First, this is an attempt to compare gridded reanalysis data taken from four regional climate models, those are the ones in color here, versus a simulation with actual point data, and that's in black. And this was a little bit of a disappointment overall. We did something we didn't expect. You can see that in general, with a couple of exceptions, the reanalysis data tends to underpredict or understimulate relative to the observed here, particularly with one or two models, the HRM3, and you'll see why in just a second. But in some cases, this difference is very, very large, which brings up a concern about the use of some of the model data. There are some differences here, though, out in the far northwestern part of our domain. You can see a couple of the models actually overestimate relative to the observed, but generally over the entire domain, the trend is for the reanalysis data to underestimate, and I'll talk more about why. Next, looking at the cause and effect, why do we see these things? Well, you've got here a variety of different variables. These are summed over the growing season, so roughly April through September. Why do we see the model behave the way it does? Here are the mean across all of these 18 sites that I've shown you here. Here are the mean yields, and you can see all of them are less than that with the observed data here. And then, of course, the question, why? Well, notice that the reanalysis data, all of them are drier on versus the observed data. They're typically warmer, both max and minimum temperature, have higher solar radiation values. That was one thing that we didn't expect. And what that results in ultimately is, accelerates the phenology. This is the duration between planting and silk and the duration in days between silking and maturity. And in most of these simulations, that is shortened. And as you shorten that, you reduce the potential for the crop to produce. And as a result of that, some of the yields came down because of that. They also came down because of lesser precipitation, higher precipitation. Water stress was higher. This is a non-dimensional value here between 0 and 1, and it represents the number of days during the growing season in which water stress is present. So the higher the number this number is, the greater the amount of water stress. And you can see that for a couple of these models, in particular the HRM3 and the WARF-G, that stress value is elevated. One interesting thing, you look at the frequency of precipitation, daily precipitation, this is all on a daily time scale. On average, about 1 out of 3 days in our region has measurable precipitation, but for those reanalysis products, some of them mishandle the precip frequencies. One here, the CRCM, 75% of the days with wet. That changes the dynamics in soil moisture especially. And so that's another cautionary flag and one of the things we didn't know. Now, overall, the MM5 RCM was found to be the closest to our actual observations. Now, as we look ahead here in terms, what do these projections show about the future? Again, this is 2041 versus 2041 to 2070 versus historical. What they suggest averaged over our entire domain, of course, is warming. And depending on location, that warming ranges from about 2.5 degrees to 4 degrees Celsius. There's a little bit more with our downscaled future data versus our raw model output. Those are two of the treatments we looked at. One of these, the future delta, you can see is a little bit wetter on average and a little bit more solar radiation, a little bit different for the raw model output, drier and a little bit less in terms of solar radiation as a whole. But overall, the entire domain was warmer for the projection. That's not a surprise. And this is an agreement with even most recent models. I'll move here quickly to basically look at yields projected for the future. This is interesting. Overall, if you average across our domain and look at this difference between historical, there was a 24% decrease in yields for our downscaled projections of the future, even a little bit larger for our raw model output data, 36% difference. And then these are expressed for each of those five RCM, GCM combinations, and each of those here, box and whiskers plot, and these are median, then 30, 10, and then extreme. That's what's on the box and whiskers. And you can see that there are some of the yields over these 18 sites that are increases, but not very many. Most of the distributions lie well below zero here. These are expressed in a ratio of the change in the future relative to the past. And the other interesting thing to note here is with downscaling versus no downscaling, similar patterns. That's one of the questions we had. Other questions that we asked were, does it make a difference if you use a different GCM versus different RCM? And the answer here is that it appears the choice of RCM is relatively more important than the choice of the GCM, at least in terms of the amount of uncertainty and the change. So again, most of the model projections over our domain do suggest decreases in potential. Now I'm going to look at, there's some regional differences. Adam just noted some of those across the geography. It's a large area here. And over the majority of our domain here with our little bar charts or bar graph here, we can see decreases in potential yields, with one exception, and that's up here in the northern part of the domain. You can see a couple of these RCM-GCM combinations suggest increases, but everything else is negative across the domain. It's also the case here for our downscaled or delta projections of the future, with the exception, look at here at South Dakota, at Brookings, all suggested increases as well as Grand Forks, with decreases elsewhere. So again, the question, why? Looking at this, most of it's pretty self-explanatory. These growing season means of different variables for the five different combinations of regional and global climate models. Decreases in precipitation, you can see growing season at most of them. Increases in temperature, again, the ratio, if it's greater than one, it means that the future is greater than the past. Duration of our phenology or our cropping season is shortened. Again, that's directly, especially for the grain fill period, which is here silking to maturity, that takes off yield, and an increase overall across the board in water stress. So all of those things collectively point to a decrease, if everything's held constant, a decrease in yields in the Midwest. Now, that was for a representative site in Illinois. If we look at Grand Forks, where we saw increases in yield, up here at the top, you can see, except for one model here, the HRM3, which is a little bit of a decrease, we have increases in yield. And there are, at many of these, there are still decreases in precipitation, increases in temperature, and decreases in water stress. So the question is, well, why? How does that happen? And well, do a little more investigation. You have to look out to the rest of the season. And what we found was that there is relatively wetter conditions in the off season. So the annual precipitation, even though the growing season precipitation may decrease, we have more precip in the off season. And some of that's going directly into production, is stored, and the crop is able to use that later. So very, very interesting. And that explains some of those yield increases in the northwestern part of our domain. So summarizing here quickly, at least for this part of it, this gives you an example of some of the model simulation work that, again, attempts to bring the cause and effect together with the weather and climate versus the impact. And you can see some of the results we've just seen here. Again, over most of our area, decreases in yield are projected into the future because of the warmer climate, a little bit less precipitation. And as it says at the bottom, if you look at the modeling process itself, you do have to be a bit careful because decisions you make and which regional climate models use can influence the impact of your results. End here with an example where we are right now and where we're headed. This is another model output summary looking at the impact of irrigation versus rain-fed production systems. For historical data, with the amount of irrigation that's needed, again, across the, and of course it increases rapidly as you go from east to west, but this is the type of output that will be used to inform some of the products and tools, decision support tools that you'll see here shortly. And with that, I'll finish up. Thank you very much.